Welcome to episode 507 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Follett.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. Josh, I'm so happy to be home from CES.
I bet. That's how I always felt after CES also. But I think I'm still nursing a little bit of a depressed hangover about not being able to be there this year.
Yeah, I totally understand. Every once in a while, though, you know, it's probably good to take a year off. I've done that once.
Once out of 14 years, I think you said it was? 15 years?
Yeah, 15 years, so 14 shows that I've gone to.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, we've got quite a bit of listener feedback to get into tonight. A couple of comments, a couple of emails. So let's jump right into that. The comments were on post, of course, over at the website. The email, well, the address for that is entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com if you'd like to send us some for a future episode. First up, a comment from John. I think it'll be obvious which post all of these comments are from. He says, it's now been 2.5 years since Silicon Dust announced the Prime 6 and still not here. They finally got tired of lying to all of us and now have a letter posted saying they will never say when until it is actually available. There was more to this comment, but I think that what we've got there pretty much sums up what John was trying to express.
Yeah, which is clearly shared frustration for the lack of product that we've all been waiting for from Silicon Dust. So I did respond to him on this. I felt, I don't want to call anyone out, but I felt like he got a little bit too personal in this. And what I wanted to just kind of discuss tonight as we look at this is that, you know, we've brought this device up. You wrote about it a year ago. I think that's probably where this comment was. And your post was, you know, where is the Prime 6? It's not here yet. And that is true. And we've talked about this, I think, at the end of the year, where I'm dubious about this. I don't know if this will ever happen. I want to be really clear about something. I am not a Silicon Dust apologist, right? I mean, I hate the user experience that they have available to consumers in their applications, but they make really good hardware. And the team behind this is real people that are having to make hard business decisions to figure out what's going to keep their company successful. And I kind of just have to trust that they're going to make the decision that makes sense for them and consumers and balance those interests. And maybe that means that this will come out eventually, and maybe it means it doesn't. But I'm kind of past being angry about it. At this point, it's almost humorous.
I'm not so sure that I'd go with humorous. I mean, I think we're all roughly on the same page here. We had hoped this would come out a long time ago. We're disappointed that it hasn't yet. I think I'm with you that I'm not sure anymore. And we did talk about this a couple weeks ago. I'm not so sure, even though I think I predicted that it would, that it will come out ever. Because, like you said, this particular market, it's shrinking. And it's shrinking a lot. And it's shrinking quickly. So, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it's disappointing. But like you said, businesses have to make decisions that make sense for their businesses. They've got employees to think about.
Right. Now, put a pin in that, because I'm going to come back to this 2 messages from now.
Okay. Well, then I'll read the next one from Solicit, I guess. He says, he or she, I don't know, says, I use Windows Media Center running on Windows 7 to watch cable TV through an HD Home Run Prime. After several days of no data, channel listing, text, and constant reminders to download the guide. Today, January 4th, 2020, I found the guide data is all there again. Has Microsoft resumed updates, or has another party picked up the task of updating the guide data, if that's even possible? Well, I'm pretty certain that's not possible. So it would have to be Microsoft fixing, well, if it was a glitch on January 1st, we're not even sure, right? Potentially fixing that glitch from January 1st. But this is the only comment we got that this started working, which leads me to a couple of thoughts. Either everyone gave up once it stopped working on the 1st, or everyone who did still care switched to EPG 123 by then.
Well, and, you know, kind of kudos for Solicit for not giving up and hanging in there. I honestly am just flabbergasted if Microsoft actually fixed a glitch to keep the guide working, if that was only going to be for another couple of weeks. Right. I totally didn't expect that to happen.
No, I wouldn't think that they would do that either. That doesn't seem to make any sense to me.
Well, I mean, we clearly didn't think it was going to happen because you already wrote the eulogy.
Well, yeah, I mean, frankly, it's a eulogy I could have written a long time ago. But I always said that it wouldn't be dead until the guide data was dead. And it sure seemed like it was dead.
Yep. So maybe you have another couple of weeks going, but if you haven't already done so, you should really be looking at an alternative guide solution. And I think EPG 123 is the one that we're recommending based on its cost and ease of use.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, it's Josh breaking in here. We did a little bit more digging the day after we recorded the show, and it turns out Windows Media Center guide data is indeed back and functioning. So if you haven't done the switch over to EPG 123, your guide data is back. However, we don't know how long it'll be around. Microsoft never actually said when the guide data would stop working. So it could be today. It could be the end of the month. They said in their initial support post that after January, guide data would no longer be provided. So our best guess is that you've got through the end of the month. But by then, you better be looking at EPG 123 if you're planning to stick with Windows Media Center. All right, now back to the show. All right, next one up, and this one is from Kevin. He says, I'd like to talk about the complexity that comes with anything that isn't provided by your TV provider from the point of view of the typical person that probably doesn't listen to your podcast.
Well, we need to fix that.
Yeah, no kidding. We're not to 7 billion listeners yet. After finding and listening to your podcast, I decided to build my first computer for the purpose of it being a media center. I know I could have purchased a computer from a PC manufacturer, but it seemed like a better idea to build one for a dedicated Media Center PC. I was able to build it, get Media Center up and running with an Infinity V4 card, and it all worked well for 2 or 3 years until I decided to stop subscribing to cable. Currently, probably the most talked about product on the podcast is Plex. Of course, I listen with curiosity to learn more about Plex when it is discussed on the podcast. My mind always goes back to the barrier of entry with a product like Plex when it comes to the average consumer. You need a computer to run Plex. It's not entirely true. You need to install and configure Plex, set up libraries, connect network tuners, all of that stuff. From a general consumer's point of view, think of both Plex and Media Center. How many normal people do you guys know that are willing to buy and build a PC, configure it, go through the process to get tuners installed, work with a cable provider to get cable card configured? How many people would even know of such a thing as cable card? Good point. And maintain that server. Even with something like an NVIDIA Shield TV, the barrier to entry is easier. But in my opinion, it's still more difficult than the average consumer is willing to put up with. With PC-based solutions, you either have to put up with a PC in your cabinet or run cables and IR blasters from a remote location in your home. Is there no money to be made in this space? I really thought by now that someone would sell a solution like an Apple TV or Shield TV style box where all you have to do is power it up, hook your cable to the back, and get a media center-like UI and experience. Something that works for the masses, not just the TV enthusiast community. I guess there are devices like this, what you get from your TV provider. And TiVo, what are your thoughts? Will this always be sort of a niche area, or will someone figure out how to bring something like this to the masses? I think the barrier to entry for things like Plex are currently too high.
Hear, hear.
Right. He's clearly been listening for a long time.
I couldn't agree with him more on this. And I actually got back to him about this because I this is so dear to my heart. This is my biggest problem with Plex and everything else, is that it's just too hard. And then the experience itself is just too complex. And so, you know, I mentioned in our last episode, I spoke with the folks at Plex, and they want to be the center of your media. And that's great for techie people. It's not going to happen for average consumers. It's just not. So what do we have? He's right. Cable boxes and TiVo. And so here's where I wonder. Here's my glimmer of hope for a solution from Silicon Dust. When we thought we were going to see the Prime 6 last year at CES, what instead they rolled out was an all-in-one box, a DVR and storage solution for over-the-air all-in-one box. So what if the Prime 6, or whatever they release to support cable card, if they do, isn't just a tuner? What if it combined all of the DVR capabilities and storage and the tuner capabilities that we know they know how to build, and came up with something that's a viable competitor to TiVo or what your cable company is offering? Now, I don't like the experience that they're going to have, but it might be suitable for enough people and certainly cheaper than what most folks would be paying their cable company.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought, that the Prime becomes a new version of the Scribe. Yeah, it's the HD Home Run Scribe Duo is the product you were talking about. And
right.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of people who aren't big fans of the UI that HD Home Run provides. And with HD Home Run, it's just the DVR. It's not all of the other stuff that Plex would give you. So that still doesn't really meet what he's looking for.
Well, it doesn't give you all of your collected video, right?
Right.
It's just a solution for what you want to watch on live TV. But I would argue that as an app in some ecosystem is probably all that you need. So, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll get there. There were rumors at CES. They didn't talk about it, but there were rumors that Amazon maybe looking at a cable version of their, I can never remember what it's called, Recast or whatever it is, that is their DVR solution currently only available for over the air.
I think the thing to remember with Plex is that it's not really meant to be a normal consumer sort of product.
Even though it's on every device you can buy.
Right, but Plex kind of assumes that you're either going to the trouble of ripping all of your content or stealing it. And
I don't know what you're doing. I don't see you. I don't hear you.
Right. And normal people aren't doing that.
Right.
Normal people now are just using Netflix or using like Amazon. Not Amazon Prime, but the Amazon video rental service. There's lots of video rental services. I don't think that something like Plex, where you're taking all of your media to make it available all over the place, is a common consumer thing anymore. Most people are streaming their music from services like Spotify and Apple Music. I have to imagine that disc sales for movies have been dropping year over year. I haven't looked at the data, but I just have to imagine that they have been.
Yeah, it is.
So it is kind of a niche product, and it can be. It's not always hard to sell to a niche. But what if Plex started selling that box?
That's an interesting idea. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that says that they couldn't. Again, I don't trust either them or HD Home Run, or rather Silicon Dust, to provide the overall experience. And that's the challenge that I have with anything that goes down that path.
Mm. Okay.
At least not one that's going to appeal to what he was talking about, which is the general consumer.
Yeah. But Plex or anybody else could build something like this on top of Android TV. Plex.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Because
I agree.
Plex already runs as a server on the NVIDIA Shield. Mm-hmm. So this is totally doable. Mm-hmm. Maybe Kevin should just start a business doing this. See how it works.
Licensing is going to kill you. Could. So maybe not.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the barrier to entry to being on the manufacturing side of this is that it's expensive to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Well, let's move on to our final message this week, and that is from Jamie. Now, Jamie, I dramatically edited your document so that we could fit this in here, but Jamie got in touch with us, and I'm so excited about this. He uses Chameleon Media Center. At least I'm assuming Jamie is a he. I'm going to say it's a he. So Jamie says, I listened to your December 19th Entertainment 2.0 podcast and was happy to hear your commentary on the Chameleon Media Center application. I've been using this application for 2.5 years now, and I love it. It was originally developed by a MyMovies user who wanted a Windows MyMovies application that would replace the Windows Media Center GUI that was dropped by Microsoft a few years earlier. Like the developer, I was unhappy with the Windows Media Center hack for Windows 10, as well as JRiver, Kodi, and even Plex. Also, I wasn't happy with the idea that I'd have to abandon all the work and money that I invested in my MyMovies library. Yeah, I hear you there, Jamie. Believe me. He goes on, and I'm going to summarize what he says in the next few paragraphs. He says he tried Chameleon. It was then called MM Browser. And I think I remember hearing about that actually at the time. And he found the developer to be really responsive to requests. So the developer actually made some changes that he had recommended to how it managed file input and stuff like that. So he says, going into great detail, that Chameleon invokes third-party players like PowerDVD, JRiver, DFAB Player, Windows 10 Movies and TV, and Media Player Classic to show videos. And it can also support video and audio files, and it can even launch third-party services through a web browser. So something like HBO.com or Netflix, for example, kind of integrating that into the experience, which is pretty cool. I have to imagine it does something similar to what PlayOn does on the PlayOn server. And finally, he says, all of these things that I like about Chameleon Media Center have made me a devoted user. Chameleon does cost $20 per license, but a person who has 100 or fewer titles can use it for free. So tons of good feedback there. Thank you so much, Jamie. This is great to know. I'm so glad that there are people enjoying this. And when, you know, we talked about this, we were excited to see that it was out there. So thanks for letting us know about that. And we'll again have a link in the show notes to this application so that if anyone else is interested in getting it, they can look into it themselves.
Yeah, definitely. I need to download this just to see how it integrates with those web browser things. 'Cause
yeah,
that's tricky, especially if you're using a remote control.
Yes. Yes, it is. And again, like I said, I think it's probably doing something very similar to what PlayOn does. But remember, all PlayOn has to do is basically scrape in real time. You don't have to do any, you know, like shuffling around on your timeline. So I'm curious if you're right, if it allows you to use your remote control to do anything like, you know, even just pause, even if you couldn't rewind, just to be able to pause would be nice.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be really nice. All right. Well, that does it for all of our listener feedback. That was a ton, but we're really happy. Like we love hearing what you all are doing with your home entertainment stuff. So thanks for all the feedback. And now let's get on to the rest of the show. Richard, we're recording this on January 14th, 2020.
It's a sad day.
It is a sad day. There's been a lot of sad days for the show in the last couple of weeks. We thought that this would be the only one, but got surprised at the beginning of the month. Today is the last day that Windows 7 receives support. After today, no more updates for Microsoft unless you're some big enterprise and willing to pay a bunch of money to get updates on your PCs. We've kind of beat this topic to death, but I couldn't let this day pass without us at least pointing it out, right? And the other thing that I think is worth pointing out is years ago, like 5 years ago, when Windows 10 came out, Microsoft made it possible for you to upgrade for free to Windows 10. Now they said, you better hurry up and do this because it's not going to be free forever. And then eventually they stopped advertising it because it was past the date that you could supposedly do this. Apparently, you can still do this. Like, apparently, it's really not hard. So if you are like, all right, fine, it's over. Now I'll make the upgrade to Windows 10. We'll have a link in the show notes to an article that talks about how to do that. And hopefully it'll work for you. If you really want to be crazy, do the Windows Media Center hack. No, don't do that. Really don't do that.
No.
But yeah, the end of one of the best operating systems to ever exist.
I would argue it was the best version of Windows, period.
So where does Windows 8 fall in that list for you? Just kidding.
I'm just going to say one time, I called it from the beginning.
Yeah. So you're still of the camp that Windows 7 is still better than Windows 10.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. I'm not sure that I agree, but Windows 7 was fantastic. It absolutely was.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to some actual video news here. And I think this is a story about your TV provider, isn't it?
It is. So just a couple days ago, Verizon came out with an announcement that they are cutting cable bundles and contracts to try and get to a more transparent pricing model for people and to try and stay competitive. So apparently, you know, they've gotten a lot of pushback, as have all of the cable companies, on this idea that when you change your service, you're expected to go under a 2-year contract. Otherwise, there's usually some sort of penalty or additional cost associated with it. And also that, well, you know, if you really want cable, then it's going to be cheaper to get cable if you also get phone. And then even cheaper if you also get internet service, all from the same provider. So supposedly, and I have not fully tested this out because I'm not a brand new customer, but if you go and try to sign up for Verizon Fios now, if it's available in your area, and yes, despite all of the rumors of Verizon Fios death, you can still get Verizon Fios, then you'll be confronted with a menu that's an a la carte menu, basically. You just pick the things that you want, they cost what they cost, you put them together, and that's your overall price. It even includes, and this is astounding to me, YouTube TV as an alternative to their cable channel packages.
That is kind of surprising because they still do offer their cable TV packages.
Yeah, absolutely. But maybe you don't want cable from them. Maybe you just want to get streaming TV. So I guess they cut a deal with Google so that they get a commission or a portion of the fee that they're charging. It's $50. It's the same that you would pay YouTube directly if you got it from them. So it's an interesting way of pricing things. Now, The Verge reports, and reports might be a big word there based on how they identified this, but The Verge says that there are no hidden fees here. And I think that that's kind of bunk because you still have the whole thing where you add it all up and now you have all of these different like transfer fees and state this and I don't know. There's probably some 9/11 fee associated with cable too that I don't know about. And if you have phone service, you're probably still paying for like Touchtone. Who the hell knows? Like, it's just crazy. All the things that they add. I don't believe that that portion of things has changed. You still have that fees and taxes section in your bill. But what I can confirm, because I did this last night, is that if I were to upgrade my router, there's been an offer for me with Verizon Fios to upgrade my router and basically pay like half what I'm paying now for cable and get much, much faster internet by getting off my old router. But then I have to either purchase or rent the new router, and I had to go on another 2-year contract. And when I checked last night, there's now an option to order that without the 2-year contract. It's a little bit more expensive, but I can now get that upgraded service and still pay a lot less than what I'm paying now for better service.
So you're going to do this then, right?
So I'm going to do this. I actually tried to do this in the app, and I had a question that I tried to get answered from their chatbot. And once I got past the chatbot and had a person, I don't know if you know anything about how these like chat support services work, but basically you have a customer service rep who's talking to like 10 people at once.
Right.
It's incredibly inefficient for anyone on the customer side because they're just waiting and waiting and waiting. And after 20 minutes, I still didn't get the answer to my question. So I ultimately ended up bailing, and I'll just go on and do it on my computer later. But I'm happy that this is available, and I'm glad to see it. It's an interesting turn of events, and it's a good example of the free market working.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's move on to some audio news. This is one I wanted to talk about last week because this was an announcement from CES, but there was a lot going on, so we didn't talk about it last week. It's a new part of the Bluetooth spec was announced last week, and some new technologies that they're all bundling under the title of Bluetooth LE Audio. And the LE stands for low energy. Bluetooth low energy is something that's been around for over 6 years now, I think. Most of your fitness trackers and things like that, like things that don't require constant connection and stuff like that, they're using Bluetooth LE because it doesn't use as much power, so the battery life is a lot longer.
Right.
Audio, well, it requires a constant connection. It's constantly streaming data between, say, your phone and your headphones. And the higher the bitrate, the more power it's going to take, basically. So this new version of Bluetooth LE Audio utilizes a new compression algorithm called LC3, and it compresses the audio to about half the size. The half of the bitrate is required to transmit at what they say is the same quality or better. And since it's about half the bitrate, it uses about half the power. So in theory, if you were to take a pair of Bluetooth headphones that you have now and swap the chip out for a Bluetooth LE audio chip and do the same in your phone, your headphones would get twice the battery life.
That's not how it's going to work. You're going to have to buy new ones.
Well, of course, you are going to have to buy. Yeah, you're not going to go and replace the Bluetooth chip in your headphones. But that's what we're talking about here. Headphones that get twice the battery life. And when I think about that, I think about some of the headphones we talked about on last week's show, the Clear Audio Enduro ANC. They got right. 60.
Already get 60.
Yeah, right. 60 hours. Now it's 120 right. hours of battery life. That's crazy. Super crazy. So that's almost good enough. But there's other things that are coming with this that I think are cool for the general consumer and have the potential to really, really be kind of monumental impact in the world. So let's start with something that's maybe not quite so monumental, though. The other big feature is called multi-stream. What a lot of people don't realize about these truly wireless earbuds is that your phone is not sending the audio stream to both of your earbuds. It's only sending it to one. And then that earbud is sending the signal to the other one. And
through your brain.
Through your brain, right. Yeah. So that'll bake your noodle. But that can cause problems. I imagine that people who buy really cheap headphones probably have delay issues or problems pairing them and stuff like that. It can be rather problematic. If you're buying AirPods, it's probably not an issue. But multi-stream does away with that and instead will just send the stream to all of the connected devices. So to each individual earbud. That's a good thing. Maybe not one that you're going to notice for sure. One that's a bigger deal, they're going to support hearing aids. So you could now build hearing aids with this Bluetooth technology, which means, you know, basically Bluetooth earbuds that someone with hearing issues could make phone calls with and talk to smart assistants and, you know, things like that. So there's some cool implications there. I don't know a ton about hearing aids, so I'm not going to try and pretend like I know all of the really great details there, but it sounds like it could be really good.
Yeah, I mean, stuff like this exists, but again, battery life is the killer, right? Because you're trying to do so much in such a tiny, tiny little thing. And so historically, a lot of these devices have had maybe, you may remember when, well, at least when I was a kid, like if I was in school and a kid had a hearing aid, it was something that he or she literally wore around their neck. And it had a wire that went up to an earpiece. And so the modern versions of these today have usually something that is an auxiliary thing. Either it works with your phone or it works with this auxiliary box that you might wear around your neck, you might put in a pocket or something like that. And the implication here is that you could potentially do a whole lot more in a lot less space because it takes a lot less battery power to do all this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The other, one of the other features, not just the only other one, because there's two more here to talk about, audio sharing. This, I think, is kind of a big deal. How many times have you been on an airplane ride with your family or friends? And I'm talking 10 years ago. And you want to both be watching a movie on one tablet. Well, when tablets had headphone jacks, you could plug a headphone splitter in and both of you could plug in your headphones. Now that everything's Bluetooth, you can't do that. Only one person can watch something on a tablet, or only one person can listen to a song on a particular phone. With Bluetooth audio sharing through this new technology, multiple people would be able to connect to the same device with their headphones. So I think that's really cool. I think that'll be really cool and could be awesome for like minivan rides when you're going on a family vacation. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe all the kids have their own headphones and now it can all be wireless without proprietary wireless stuff that might be built into some minivans already. So there's a lot of cool possibilities there. Now, the last one is the one that I think, well, definitely big businesses are going to be the most excited about, but I think could be the most impactful in our normal lives. And they're just calling this functionality broadcast. they could, in theory, broadcast one, you know, one audio stream to essentially an infinite number of devices. So some of the use cases for that is like, are you working out at the gym? Like, if you've ever been to a gym, there are TVs all over the place, but you can't hear any of them. It's super loud in there. So they could broadcast the audio from those TVs to everybody's Bluetooth headphones. If you're at an airport, you know, there are TVs there. There's signage talking about flight status and all that stuff. All of that could have audio being broadcast to whoever wants to tune in. Sports bars have TVs all over the place with all of the different games. But if you want to hear the announcer, good luck. You're not going to get to hear the announcer. So that's just some of the things that I could come up with. But there's tons of possibilities here for this technology.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. I think the thing that that opens up is security concerns, because you're really talking now about open access to a Bluetooth connection. And so I'll be curious to see how they handle security in a way that still keeps the Bluetooth network, if you will, secure, but otherwise allows people to freely kind of hop on if they want to.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And if you're in a public place, like at a shopping mall or an airport or something, how do you handle the connection for all of this? Because now you open up Bluetooth and there's 75 different Bluetooth sources to connect to.
It's going to be just like looking for Wi-Fi.
Which is miserable.
Right, right. Yeah, I think this is going to be challenging. It'll be an interesting problem for device makers like tablet and phone and stuff like that to try and solve. But imagine if all you have is headphones.
Yeah.
And your headphones themselves just, you know, like I have my Bose headphones and I flick the little switch on it and it announces the name of the next thing that's available for me to connect to and the next thing that's available. For, am I going to have to do that like 16 times before I find the TV that I actually want to listen to? We'll see how this plays out.
Yeah, there's definitely some tougher usability problems to solve there, but I'm really excited about this technology.
Now, did they talk at all about timing? Because anytime the Bluetooth SIG special interest group talks about new Bluetooth specs, I worry about how long it's going to take to actually become production, to actually get published, be official, and then to have chip hardware made that can support it, or we can end up in the same situation like we are now today with mesh, where nobody's mesh stuff meshes with each other because everybody got tired of waiting for Bluetooth to mesh, so they created their own.
Right. They're saying this year. They're saying products this year.
Okay.
So who knows? Maybe it doesn't even require new hardware. It seems like it probably would, but maybe it doesn't.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Interesting.
If I would have been at CES, I would have gone and talked to them about it, but I wasn't there.
Oh, I think that was a little bit of a stab.
No, jeez. It wasn't. You didn't know about this. Like, I didn't tell you to go and talk to them.
I actually did hear about this while I was there. I just didn't even know where they were.
Yeah, that's
like, presumably the Bluetooth SIG had a booth somewhere, but I didn't see it.
Right. Probably right next to the HDMI booth. Like, why does HDMI have a booth at CES? That's always been weird to me. Anyway, let's move on to some gaming news. Not a ton here, but a couple of interesting ones. So obviously this is a huge year in gaming as both Microsoft and Sony are releasing new consoles. And normally when that happens, everyone starts saving up tons of money because you've got to buy the new console. You've probably got to buy some extra controllers and you've got to buy the games because when a new console comes out, it launches with games that are only playable on that console.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft's going a different route this year. Matt Booty, who's an executive in the gaming department over at Microsoft.
Wait, that's really his name?
That's really his name. Yeah.
Wow. I bet he's glad his name isn't Max.
Wow. Anyway, he was being interviewed by MCV UK, and he said, as our content comes out over the next year, 2 years, all of our games, sort of like PC, will play up and down that family of devices. He added, we want to make sure that if someone invests in Xbox between now and Series X, that they feel that they made a good investment and that we're committed to them with content. So what this means is when all of these launch titles come out for Xbox Series X this fall, a bunch of them will also be available on Xbox One. And this has never been done before in the, you know, almost 30-ish years of mainstream console gaming. This is never how it's worked. And I think it's reasonable to assume that the main reason no one has ever done this is because they want you to buy the new hardware.
Right.
So I don't know how well this is going to work out for them. Like, I guess it depends on what they're looking for. If all they care about is people playing their games and paying for their services, then this is a really great thing for the customer. Like, it's win-win for the customer and for Microsoft. But if they're trying to just sell boatloads of brand new consoles, this seems like it's going to go against that.
I have to wonder what their motivations are. And it's hard for me to believe that it's really as altruistic as they suggest, that they want everybody to have the best experience no matter what device they have. Oh.
I don't know. They've been doing a lot of really consumer-oriented things over the last couple of years. When you think about Game Pass and all of the first-party titles being available day one on Game Pass, this is really similar to that. And that seems to have been working out pretty well for them. A whole lot of people played Gears 5 last year. I did too, but only through Game Pass. I didn't give them $60 to play that game. So I don't know. It'll be really, really interesting to see, like, 6 months after the launch, what sort of impact it's had on console sales. But Microsoft never talked about units sold of the Xbox One because they were always behind the PlayStation 4. So we may just have to guess from other sources. Mm-hmm. So then, of course, the question is, well, what's PlayStation going to do? And they haven't announced whether or not they would follow suit here. But Jason Schreier from Kotaku, who he knows, like, this is a dude who somehow really gets in with, it seems like, everybody in the industry. When Jason Schreier reports something, it's probably more than a rumor. So he just reported on Kotaku today that Sony is not going to do this. They're going to do what they've always done, and they will be having PlayStation 5 exclusives at launch. So we'll see how it works out for both of these companies. But I don't know. It's a really daring move for Microsoft, I think. And we always hope that these guys win. Both Microsoft and Sony. We want them all to do well. So hopefully this will work out well for Microsoft. Now,
But mostly Microsoft.
I play my Xbox. I hardly play my PlayStation. So one more gaming story, and this one is a short one. Today, Sony announced, like they did last year, they're not going to E3. They're done. And a lot of people thought, okay, last year it made sense. Like, there weren't big console exclusives coming out last year. But in 2020, Sony will probably go because they're launching a new console. Nope. They're done. They don't want to deal with the ESA anymore. I mean, they're putting it way more politely than that, but they don't see the need to be there. They don't see the need to spend the money. So they're not going to be there, which means the main focus at E3 will be Microsoft. So
yeah, I also think this is pretty strategically clever for them, because this forces Microsoft to kind of tip their hat while Sony can just, like, drip out whatever information they want to when they want to on their own schedule.
Well, I still think that Microsoft ends up doing a standalone launch event for the Series X. I think we'll know most of the details about the Series X prior to E3. And then E3 is going to be like all about games.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I agree with you about a standalone launch event as well. Remember, I said that I don't expect that they're going to give us, like, you're not going to get everything you want to know, including pricing at E3. It's not going to happen.
I think you might know it before E3.
I don't think so.
Or maybe they give us everything but the price before E3. And then at E3, they give us the price. I think by the time E3 is over, we'll know the price of both of these consoles.
All right. Putting it on my calendar.
Do you even know what month E3 is?
It's June, isn't it?
It is June. Good job. Good job. All right. Well, just a quick hit on free games, because Microsoft does their weird schedule of games. It's the second half of January now. So that means that you now get access to LEGO Star Wars 2, the original trilogy, as your free Xbox 360 game. And Batman the Telltale series is now available for free on the Xbox One. All right, that's it. That's it for our gaming news. That's really it for all of our news. Richard, this is kind of my favorite segment oftentimes. What's going on in your entertainment center?
Well, I was away. So, you know, when I go away, stuff goes wrong.
Uh-oh.
This time, the battery in the remote died.
Which remote?
The universal remote that Edward uses for everything.
Is it hard to change batteries in this device?
Oh, yeah. There's no obvious affordance, no obvious hint in design on the remote I have for where a battery might be hidden in this thing.
Are you talking about the little Logitech yes. one? Yeah. Yeah. You're not kidding. I thought that the batteries were dead in mine once, and I'm like, I have no idea. Like,
right.
Is there a charger that I got with this that I forgot about?
Like, right.
It is not obvious at all.
So, yeah. So that died. And I understandably got a little bit of grief about the fact that the TV wouldn't turn off.
Oh, no. The batteries died while the TV was on?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. So I ended up spending some time going through and kind of finding all the remotes, because he ended up trying every remote in the cabinet, which was unfortunate for him because there were at least three in there that that device hasn't been active for years.
Right.
So I spent some time this weekend and I went through and I got rid of stuff that we weren't using anymore. And I'm like, well, while I'm doing this, I should replace all the batteries. And while I'm doing this, I should probably get rid of all these cables that we're not using anymore and clean the whole thing up. So I basically tore my entertainment system apart in just trying to get things a little bit more up to date. While I was doing that, I also installed the new Sonos amp that I bought. Remember, we talked about the Sonos amp and Sonos port going up in price. So if you wanted to, and you didn't have a chip on your shoulder about the way that they were handling their artificial recycling program, you could get a 30% discount by basically bricking your current device and sending it to a recycle center and then getting a new one for 30% off. So I did that. I disabled an old Kinect and I got the Sonos amp instead. So I hooked that up. I don't have it all working yet. I still need some cables that I don't have, and I'm hoping to get that taken care of soon. But yeah, I was doing some surgery on Sunday afternoon after I had gotten home. So that was kind of fun, actually.
It is kind of fun. I actually did the same thing. So,
Yeah,
oddly, I did the same thing. So I'll dig into my stories once we get to my section.
All right, that's cool. Now, in terms of watching stuff, I haven't actually watched a whole lot. Just kind of the usual one. I'm trying to focus on what I'm watching so I can get through things a little bit faster. So I am up to date. Well, I'm looking at my watch until now, like this very minute. I am up to date on This Is Us and New Amsterdam. I watched a bunch of episodes of The Flash and Arrow trying to finish the last season. We had new episodes of The Good Place, Superstore, and Modern Family. So
what?
I watched.
We did?
Yes, we did. So I watched each of those. And Doctor Who has started. That started on the 1st of January. So Edward and I have been watching that. And then today, my copy of Joker arrived. So I am really looking forward to watching that, actually.
Already. Cool.
So that's it for me. How about you?
All right. So like I said, I also did a big cleanup behind my TV stand. It was a disaster. It was so bad.
And probably dusty.
Yeah. And
cat hair.
It's better. It's still bad. I'm not good at cable management. I don't know how I would make this too much better, but it's better. I did pull out a lot of stuff. I also like cleaned out the drawer that you talked about. There were remotes that I had forgotten about. There were remotes for devices like you that I haven't used in years. They're like in boxes in the attic.
Yep.
It was nuts. I also decided I think it's time to finally just disconnect the Kinect from my Xbox. I never use this thing for anything. So, and because it with the Xbox One, I think it required it for the S and definitely the X, which is what I have connected down there. You had to use this huge, huge power adapter.
Additional power adapter.
Yes. Yeah, it's enormous. So I'm like, nope, I'm done with this. This gets tossed in the box too. So the Kinect was gone. The Wii was gone since now we've got the Switch. I also got my HD Home Run hooked back up. That hasn't been hooked up in a while because when I got the TiVo, I was like, oh, I don't have one of my splitters handy. I don't feel like finding one right now. So I got that all squared away. Also discovered why on New Year's Eve, the main TV station that we were trying to watch wasn't coming in well. Well, the amplifier antenna also was unplugged for some reason back there. I'm going to blame the cats on that one. I don't know how it happened, but it definitely wasn't hooked up. So I think I've got everything squared away pretty much how I want it. And it's good. It's really good, I think. So in terms of watching, listening, playing things, I haven't watched anything. The last couple of weeks have been crazy busy for me. Obviously CES. I also had a conference I went to last week and all that stuff. So I have been listening to audiobooks and I've been tearing through audiobooks. And I think that's because I'm getting really tired of a lot of the podcast I listen to. So I'm just not listening to a lot of them anymore. As topics shift, you know, shows that I've been listening to for years and years and years have changed their focus to things that I don't care as much about. So I'm just choosing not to listen to them, which I know is like impossible for you to do, Richard. But so I've been doing a lot of audiobooks. I've now into the third book in Tom Clancy's Ops Center series. That's been fun. I love Tom Clancy stuff. I love spy stuff. So those have been good. I also read The Gunslinger. It's the first book in the Dark Tower series from Stephen King.
Okay.
I know there's been some buzz about that because they've been trying to make a movie for it, or maybe they did. I don't know. That isn't really why I listened to it. I was just trying to come up with anything at all to listen to. And I thought my mom was a huge Stephen King fan and her favorite books were the Dark Tower series. So I should give this a try. And it was a good book. Unfortunately, I do all this through the library and book number 2 in the series has a 16-week hold list on it.
Yikes.
So, gonna be waiting a while for book 2. And the other book I listened to is called It's Up to Us. It's written by John Kasich. He's the former governor of Ohio, the state where I live. It's obviously a little bit political. He's a former governor. He ran for president a couple of times. But it's mostly stories about how to be better people, how to serve those around us. That yes, the world is kind of a mess right now, but it's not up to the politicians to fix it. It's up to us to fix it in small ways in our neighborhoods. So it was a nice, short, inspiring read.
That's cool. That's actually something that I want to read. I read meaning listened to something that was a lot more political, which is James Comey's book. But one of the things that I do want to listen to, and I have already purchased, is Dan Rather's What Unites Us. And I'm really looking forward to that. And that's supposedly very much like this John Kasich book, where it talks about, you know, all the great things about us as people in this country and what we can do to carry that on.
Cool. I'm going to have to add that to my list. And then on the gaming side, I've pretty much only played my Switch. I've been really tired, and the Switch is just so easy. Like, when I play my Xbox, I pull a chair out and I get my headphones out and all this other stuff. And I'm like, the Switch is just grab it and go sit down on the couch. So I've been continuing to play through Golf Story. Also got Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze from the library yesterday. Just played one level. It's exactly like what I remember Donkey Kong Country being like on the Super Nintendo in 1994. And that is a wonderful, wonderful thing. So that's been really good. And boy, I hope this weekend is less insane, because I would really like to get around to playing Call of Duty finally that I got for Christmas. So,
Wow.
Yeah. So I need to have the energy and time to actually get to play that. So
yeah,
that's it for me.
I saw my first Switch in the wild on my flight home from CES. I'd never actually seen anyone use one, and certainly not on a plane before.
Wow. I'm surprised that's the first time.
Yeah.
They're really popular. And they've been on for a while.
Yep. Huh.
Cool. Well, that's going to do it for this show. If you want to get a hold of us, we're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at DigiMediaZone. We're all sorts of other social places also. All of the information is over at the Digital Media Zone in our show notes. Richard, you've got another podcast, another really good podcast that you do called Home On. What's going on with the latest episode?
As I mentioned before, the last episode we had was with Molly Price from CNET. We took a look at last year's CES, and we speculated about what we'd see at this year's CES. And it was fun. I listened to this episode today with CES behind me. So it was really interesting to kind of now map all the things that we saw at CES back to the conversation that we have in many cases that we had about stuff that we had wondered about or didn't see the year prior. So that was a fun thing to listen to. Now, coming up, just about an hour ago, you agreed to be my next guest to talk with me about the smart home stuff at CES. Since we already talked about MediaTek, let's also talk about what we liked in smart home. And there was a lot there that I liked. There were so many cool products. There were some misses as well, but overall, I think it was a really good year, and I'm looking forward to that. And of course, we have some interviews from the floor to share as well.
All right. Well, we do this show live, usually, and it's usually on Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. And when we do that, that means you can hear us, you can see us on video, and most importantly, you can chat along with us and be a part of the show. So we'd love to have you join us Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Look for the links on Twitter. We'll always tweet about it when we're going live, because that's going to do it for episode 507. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.